So, I mean, AI is our generation's version of splitting the atom, right? Like when they split the atom the first time, that when we really looked down and looked at it and they said, oh crap, like this could be used for amazing things. It could be unused for unlimited harnessed power, or it could be used to wipe out civilization as we know it, right? AI is the same thing as splitting the atom, except for now it's available to 13-year-olds.
This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action, with host Armon Shrocki. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curve.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. As you have heard before, in SaaS Scaled, sometimes, we have some episodes and we have some guests that may not really talk about the exact topic again and again. This time is one of those sessions and we are going to really go and explore some topics that you may not have expected to hear, but I'm pretty sure you would enjoy it. And I have a guest, Jared. Please, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the company?
Sure. So my name's Jared Shepherd. I'm the CEO of a company called Hypori. And we are a SaaS platform. And I can talk to you guys what it's like building a unique category SaaS platform and all the challenges that come with that if you want. But, we can also explore the why and what we think we're going to build and how. I come from the non-typical background, right? I was a high school dropout homeless kid that joined the Army, and learned kind of the operational side of the military and the operational side of doing, hard things in hard places. Started my first company 20 years ago. Along the way, was asked about solving a really hard problem, which was we need to be able to have edge compute or communications. In the military, they call it command and control. I need to have command and control in the hardest places in the world when everything's at risk, right? And so the byproduct of that became the creation of what is Hypori. And Hypori is ultimately a highly secured virtual operating system that's based in cloud or on-prem that enables any edge device to interact with it, but only with pixels. So essentially, like the old days of mainframes and dumb terminals, it has the ability to make any edge device into a dumb terminal, both protecting the information of the enterprise and protecting the privacy of the edge user.
So almost as you put it before when we spoke, we are at the age that as we go forward, the communication, the connections are getting better, the processing power is going to increase. So it's almost a question of when and not if, that at one point you would think about it and say, what should I invest so much and should I manufacture so many devices of so much power and intelligence and memory and processing power and give it to the billions of people to really use, while really the centralized processing power can do a much better job. And the devices, as you said, any edge device, even simple devices, can be so powerful because they are powered by the center. Now, that kind of vision, when you put it in place, and as you mentioned, it has been around in the past and some companies try to do it. How do you see this time is going to be done in a much better way, of course, because, many of these criteria, it did not exist in the past. And now we are going to a totally different age of processing and AI combined everything. So how do you see the future can work for you with that kind of vision?
Sure. I mean, so like Hypori is beautifully simple in its concept. not necessarily in its execution, but in its concept, right? It's kind of like, if you think about the evolution of technology, it's like the idea of bottling water, right? The idea of bottling water wasn't this amazing idea that nobody ever thought of before. But before you could mass manufacture cheap plastic bottles and have distribution methods in which you could do that, and oh, by the way, before we actually knew what was in the water, you know, probably from the average tap, and we realized that there's a need to have clean, filtered water, mass manufactured at scale out on the edge, you know, the idea wasn't new. Putting water in a bottle wasn't new, but the technology had to be there to enable it to be done at scale and at impact, right? So for us, you're right. You know, this idea isn't really new. I mean, Sun Microsystems and others did it with mainframes and dumb terminals, where they put all this heavy compute into a supercomputer and you interacted with that data from a dumb terminal on an edge. And all that dumb terminal did was render information and collect information, right? So what's changed from then and now? Like, why is this unique and new now? Well, a couple of things. One is cloud has come and has offered this capability for massively scalable compute, storage, memory, processing, bandwidth, all inside of these massively interconnected sets of data centers, that simply what that power represents is something you can never put into something this size. So then it becomes like, all right, well, then why am I spending thousands of dollars trying to put that kind of compute into something small like this, when instead this could simply be the way I interact with that environment? And then when you take the idea of the elasticity of cloud, elasticity means like something that you can flex, right? You know, something that you can move. Think about you as an edge user. Even if you're a power user on a phone, you don't log on to your phone and then not turn it off for 8 hours. I mean, I hope you don't anyways. But, you know, so you log in, you check something, you do something with it, you create an activity, it produces information. Then you turn it off, right? You close the screen. Then you, 20 minutes later, maybe you log back in and you do something else, right? That is the elasticity that you could apply with cloud. Now, what if we could do that in real time and put 64 cores of processor and 64 gigs of RAM on a 10 gig backplane and give it to you for 15 minutes and then turn it back off again, right? Mm-hmm. And the only thing we're actually delivering to the edge device is pixels. Mm-hmm. And the only thing we're collecting from the edge device is telemetry, touch, type, swipe, that kind of thing, right? So it means we've actually reduced the impact on the network. We've reduced the need for high performance compute on the edge device, which means we've lowered cost on both environments. And I've given you something from a compute standpoint that you could simply never access from anywhere other than something like cloud.
Now, if you compare this for us with, for example, what Google did with Chromebook, how different it is. It is the same, it's different. You know, how would you categorize that?
In some ways the same, in some ways different, right? And like Google did a great job trying to make low cost compute, low risk compute accessible to anybody, right? You know, the idea of getting out to developing nations, developing worlds, developing infrastructure, right? Of course, the problem was it was still dependent upon connectivity that was relatively immature when they still started that program. It was still 3G, 4G when they started, you know, Chromebooks, right? Mm-hmm. So the network, the infrastructure had to develop. And then the application development, so the use of applications on edge devices simply did not flex with the Chromebook environment. And it still required a significant, like if you wanted to do something cool or custom in a Chromebook environment, it required an amount of compute that edge device simply didn't have, right? Mm-hmm. But the idea of creating a low cost interaction device is still very, very solid that could scale in a way in which we could give a massive portion of the population access that doesn't have today. And of course, now you look at things like, now we have 5G looking at 6G. So why is 5G relevant over 4G? Is it the bandwidth difference? Kind of, but actually what's a better feature, especially for what we're talking about, is the low latency, the reduction in latency into the backbone, right? So as latency comes down from edge, and then you start to interpret or introduce things like Starlink, you know, low Earth orbit satellite, there's going to be direct-to-phone capability to a low-Earth orbit satellite on sub-50 milliseconds of latency, and then a direct shot into the backbone. What does that mean? That means I don't really have to have all the data here and interact with all the data here and compute all the data here. It could reside somewhere else, and all of a sudden, the risk of this thing becomes significantly less, whether it's a phone or a tablet or a laptop, whatever that is, the risk of that becomes significantly less. I mean, like, how many of you guys like travel with a laptop? Well, the reason why you do that is because you're bringing your data and your compute with you, right? Well, what if instead, when you went to the hotel room, you could pick up the, you know, pick up the remote, turn the TV on, launch a Hypori app, Bluetooth keyboard and mouse, and have a higher speed compute than you could buy from Best Buy. Mm-hmm. Rendered on a 72-inch screen, all for $20 a month. Would you still carry a laptop around with you?
And the portability is the other aspect that you mentioned that is very important, meaning that I can use any device, any phone, somebody else's phone, and it's still, if I authenticate and, you know, log in and the server knows that it's me, then can open that space that it's my data, my settings, everything. And then I can use any device anywhere I go, even if I don't carry my own device, I can take it. And that's a very big advantage as well.
Sure. I mean, if you think about it, if your data is not actually on the edge device, then the possession of the edge device starts to matter way less, right? And so if especially look at all the new Gen AI stuff and stuff that's coming out here, you know, with agentic or whatever it happens to be, like, think about how that's going to affect multi-factor or impact multi-factor authentication or just identity management. It's going to be able to look at you on a screen and look at your GPS location and look at what you're trying to access and go, yeah, that's absolutely him, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, I just interacted with him 15 minutes ago. There's no possible way he just went to the other side of the United States or to another country. And so, like, I'm going to prevent that individual from authenticating in. So now all of a sudden, this becomes less and less important. Who and what you are doing and what information you're interacting with becomes the relevant platform. And then, like one of the, I call it a parlor trick that I love to show is, like, when I'm showing Hypori, I go, like, hey, look, I'm on two bars of 4G. And so I go into speed test and I go, how fast do you think my network connection is? And, you know, most people go, I don't know, like 20 megs, 30 megs, 40 megs. And I click speed test and it comes back at 4 gigabits. I'm like, there's no phone that can do 4 gigabits. So how am I doing that? It's not here. It's an operating system running in cloud on a data center backbone with data center compute. It will always outperform this thing. But the dependency is obviously the connection, right? Making sure that you have a good low latency connection to the edge device.
And are these devices already available in a limited way? For example, you may say, yes, we are supporting these devices for particular organizations, or it's available for public even if you wanted to buy it. Can you tell us a little bit? Because myself and probably the audience, we may not be familiar with the availability and, you know, how these devices are being used in action today.
Yeah, so Hypori has been around for a few years now, and we started out as a Department of War, U.S. Department of War technology capability for secure compute. And so we're today, we are the only enterprise-wide authorized BYOD platform, and we're the largest BYOD platform deployed in the Department of War, in the U.S. Department of War. Meaning that soldiers or service members or members of the government can access the U.S. government's secure unclassified network from their personal device with no risk to the government's network. And they don't give up any privacy because, like, we were zero trust before zero trust was a thing. Our platform assumes every edge device is compromised. And in doing so, it means I don't want visibility into what you do on your phone. That's your business. I'm just here to render an image and protect the enterprise, right? That's what the application essentially does. Mm-hmm. So we do that for the U.S. government. We do that for NATO. We do that for other activities, other you know, military and government activities for other countries. We've actually now gotten a lot of traction in banking. And ironically, we thought it was because we're just highly secured a mobile platform. And they kind of said, no, like, that's table stakes. You have to be secure to even interact with us in the first place. But they really like, you know, in fact, one of the largest investment banks in the world, they like, what they really like is data sovereignty. So think about European data sovereignty. we don't move data anywhere. We're just mm-hmm. allowing you to access it from anywhere. We make it seem as and appear as if it's in your hand and you're interacting with it, but the data actually itself continues to reside at its point of origin or where it was created, which means from a data sovereignty and privacy standpoint, we're not moving data across countries' borders. We're not moving data into other people's hands. We don't have to worry about who's in possession or control of that data mm-hmm. because it remains inside of your enterprise in your predefined security scope or scope of defense.
Very important point. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't think about it, but you're right. I mean, and this is going to be more important, not less important, for people to really understand where the data is and not being, you know, when your device is not moving the data, that's a big advantage for many of these use cases.
Yeah. I mean, think about it from a security standpoint. Like mm-hmm. today, the complexity of a security environment is like you have to figure out a way to secure every edge device. Well, what we essentially did is we allowed you to take the entire mobile environment that your enterprise uses and collapse it to a single point of entry, and it's pixels, encrypted pixels only. Like, it simplifies the defense that you have to put into place so significantly, because yes, we do detect rooted devices. Yes, we prevent screen captures. We prevent downloads. So that means that the edge device simply is just an interaction platform. It doesn't present risk, because it's just interacting with individual change pixels that are being encrypted real time. So even if you could capture every pixel we stream to you and decrypt real time AES 256 and figure out a way to lash it up without having our internal timing source, even if you could do all those things, by the way, if you can, the NSA would like to meet you. They would love to see you do that. But if you could do all those things, you would still just get an image of what I was looking at that specific point in time. You would never actually be in possession of the data.
Yeah, and also I have to imagine, I'm not expert in that area, but based on some principles and what you are telling me, I have to assume that at least, if not better, it's more controllable, or it's more manageable when it comes to malware and ransomware and those kind of things that are real problem in any big organization, and even spyware and all of those things that can
be basic things like software updating. Like, how many of us have literally pulled gray hairs out of our head because you software update process and you're trying to push a patch out and 20% of your PCs aren't online. So you got to mm-hmm. wait for them to come online to hopefully get that patch before they get exploited. Well, if all your operating systems are actually in a containerized enterprise cloud environment, when you push a patch, it's instant. Everybody gets the patch. There's no wait. There's no delay. There's no exposure time from time of release to time of publishing. You fix all that.
Now, we have gone from centralization to decentralization and then to a hybrid model, kind of back and forth. What you say is all the benefits that comes with centralization, that there are so many advantages to it. Do you see any kind of hybrid model, not in a full hybrid, but any hybrid model again emerges after you go through these processes and you introduce these devices and operating systems and software and firmware and managing devices, everything. And then you come to a conclusion 5 or 10 years from now that let me go and just introduce a hybrid kind of approach one way or the other.
I mean, look, I'm a believer in there is no absolute. There will always be a hybrid solution. There will always be a hybrid environment. There's a need. So like I can, as much as I can advocate for my platform and say I can solve a lot of problems, it would be disingenuous for me to say I can solve all of them. If you think about that from like an IoT side of the house or any kind of infrastructure sensor set, you have a 100 megapixel or a gigapixel camera, and it's collecting gigabits of data an hour. Okay, my platform or a cloud-based or centralized platform is not going to help you with that because you're producing the data on an edge device. It would make sense for you to have compute on that edge device so you can actually process and render that data and not have to push petabytes worth of data into the cloud and into storage, right? There is absolute value in processing, disseminating, and controlling and disseminating information from an edge device, depending on what your need is. It's just, it doesn't have to be every device. And from a mobility standpoint, from an access standpoint, look, the world is going mobile. mobile operating system is the number one deployed operating system in the world. Apple admits it. Microsoft knows it. Like, Apple is making the iOS operating system more and more essentially their MacBook operating system, because the world is going to a mobile platform. The way that we interact with data is becoming more and more mobile. If you look at like what Elon Musk talks about, he says eventually the operating system itself will go away. It'll just be, agentic AI of some kind that knows what information you want to interact with, and it will facilitate that interaction. But that will happen not on the edge device, right? Because the capacity for its knowledge and its compute that's going to be necessary is not going to happen on the edge device. So there's going to be pieces of this hybrid environment that you're talking about that will always be in place.
Mm-hmm. And talking about AI and talking about agentic AI and, LLMs you mentioned, and maybe the next generation of things that we don't know about it yet, but it will emerge in a few years, as it has happened all the time. Do you think the AI revolution or AI evolution, whatever you name it, is it going to actually accelerate towards centralization and, using the edge devices the way you described? Or do you think it's unknown? It may or may not help, or it might be irrelevant. What's your take on?
So, AI is our generation's version of splitting the atom, right? Like when they split the atom the first time, when we really looked down and looked at it and they said, oh crap, like this could be used for amazing things. It could be used for unlimited harnessed power, or it could be used to wipe out civilization as we know it, right? AI is the same thing as splitting the atom, except for now it's available to 13-year-olds, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it will drive both, but for different reasons. AI excels the more training information it has access to, and the more that it can train off of that information and grow, the better it can actually perform. So having access to that information implies centralization, right? Or at least centralization of knowledge of where that data resides so that it can index it and inventory it and learn from it. That being said, there is going to be a portion of the world that wants some level of isolation and protection from that. And the best way in which to do that is going to be from isolation, essentially creating isolated environments that don't have access. And that will probably be in some level of edge compute platform. So the answer is yes, I guess. It probably will be some level of both.
And you mentioned also, talking about some of these satellites that have lowered the latency and the data latency and these kind of things. Is that to the point that actually satellite nowadays using something like what is space, what we are getting from some of these modern satellites, can they actually use some edge devices with that kind of latency and actually feed data, and it's bi-directional, it's not that kind of delayed, and it become a reality? It doesn't have to be very massive kind of applications, but at least at the basic level of the applications, is a reality today to use some of these edge devices and using the satellites?
Yes, and yes. All of the above. It's going to get even better. The path that Amazon has their own LEO satellite constellation they're putting up. Starlink has their LEO constellation that they're putting up. They're about to update theirs so that they actually have direct-to-phone capability where you can communicate directly to an LEO satellite. LEO means low Earth orbit, for those of you who don't know. The reason why LEO matters versus like a traditional higher Earth orbit satellite is just physics, right? It's the time in which a radio transmission gets sent, received, sent, and then computed, right? An LEO satellite is being able to, from a data standpoint, is sub 50 milliseconds, which as compared to a high Earth orbit satellite is north of 250 milliseconds. Okay. And so when you're talking sub 50 milliseconds of interaction, that's on the edge of being faster than the human eye can perceive. I was just in Peru with my family, and because of the importance of me continuing to work with my company, I literally brought a Starlink Mini in a little carrying case. And sure enough, we ended up in a place in Peru where we didn't have any access to internet. I set the little case outside on the patio, turned it on, bang, I was up and running across Starlink, using Hypori, doing my day-to-day work. And there was almost no, you could almost not notice it at all. The one thing that you would notice a little bit is like if you're scrolling through your email really fast, you would see it would kind of go dit, 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 as it scrolls down. But mm-hmm. It wasn't perfectly smooth, but it was absolutely operable and usable to include in voice and video and teleconferences and stuff like that. And that's Starlink today. Give it another 6 months, year, 2 years, it's going to become even better, faster, more efficient.
You mentioned Peru, so that's a good segue to my random question. Okay. I travel a lot, and I ask people, which city would you recommend me to go out of all of the cities that you have visited? And if I had, you know, maybe 2 weeks, 4 weeks to go and just at the proper time, you may say this is the right season or not, but we will choose the right time to go. Sure. Which city you would say, this is the city you should really go and visit. I enjoyed it a lot. And
yeah, you know, I've been to some really cool ones. I've gotten to go to a lot of places in the Middle East. I've gotten to be some amazing places in Africa, which are really cool. Although you know, so you asked me about Peru, I'd say, look, go spend a week in Cusco in Peru. Definitely go to Machu Picchu, go to some of the other ruin sites that are around Cusco. Like look at where what was the final, you know, empire of the Incan Empire, the final resting ground of the Incan Empire, the beginning of the Spanish indoctrination and spread across South America, right? But the history that they have there and what they were able to do 1,000 years ago versus what we had here and maybe in the United States just 200 years ago is incredible. And it's one of the 7 wonders of the world for a reason. And it's an amazing experience. I highly recommend it.
Fantastic. Appreciate it. And that brings us to my last question for you, that what is the book that you liked it personally or professionally, and you would like to, you know, recommend it to others to read as well?
Oof. Build Back Better is good. When Grit Is Not Enough is good. Most recently, I was recommended this, which is called Craft from a friend of mine. It's about using an IC methodology for understanding humans in the process of selling. Grow or Die is a really good book. Admiral McRaven's book on leadership is a great book. So there's like, look, if you want to be successful, you can't sit around and hope that somebody's going to teach you. You got to go learn. And you know, I'm coming from a guy who runs 2 companies, has, you know, hundreds of employees, but my highest education is a GED. You know, there are other forms of education outside of formal. And, exactly. And as AI continues to evolve and the access to information becomes more and more universal, the importance becomes more and more on you to figure out how to learn, how to become something that matters.
Especially, you know, working with these simpler edge devices can democratize all the teaching and learning, right? Just imagine, you know, everyone in the world be able to just get a device that costs almost nothing, yeah, zero almost, and then get the best education in the planet.
I mean, imagine, yeah, being in a rural part of the world and having remote access to the internet on a really cheap tablet, like a Chromebook, and being able to say, hey, Gen AI, whatever AI mechanism, whatever AI tool I'm using, you know, Gemini or whatever, and saying, hey, I want you to perform as a elementary level school teacher, but for a high end private elementary school. And I want you to teach this child this level of education. And it goes, okay, here's our learning plan. We're going to execute the following things, right? And all of a sudden you have access to learning methodologies of learning and the implementation of learning in a way in which the world has never had, right? And especially out on the edge.
Yeah. And the beauty of this, if you were telling me this 10 years ago, the only good audience for you would have been the sci-fi lovers. But now everyone knows it's a reality. It's more 95% reality, 99% reality than not. So we are getting there, and that's beautiful. Thank you very much, Jared, for joining us. And I enjoyed our conversation, and I'm pretty sure everyone would love to learn these and just follow up and go to your website and educate themselves more about, you know, what you guys do.
Reach out to me on LinkedIn. Feel free.
Fantastic.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armon Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. and be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.